Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 3rd, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. We'll start today's edition on the front page under the health section, Babies Swaddled with Care at Decatur Memorial. This article's by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Although new moms aren't allowed to take one of the OBGYN nurses home with them, they can now swaddle their newborns just like the nurses do. Parents of babies born at Decatur Memorial Hospital are given free infant sleep sacks before they leave for home. The gray swaddling cloths are designed to snugly cradle newborn 6 to 12 pounds. Before she left the hospital, Madeline Reynolds was sporting the stylish new toga. The 7-pound newborn quickly fell asleep after she was wrapped up in her sleep sack. Her parents, Kylie and Kyle Reynolds of Forsyth, had purchased a similar item for their first child 3 years ago. Just keeping her safe was the main goal, Mom said, and it helps calm her down. It's also the peace of mind, Dad added. The gifts are a part of a safe sleep initiative sponsored by the Decatur Memorial Foundation in partnership with the Illinois Perinatal Quality Collaborative, a network of healthcare professionals committed to improving the health of Illinois babies and mothers. The foundation donated the funds to provide more than 1,100 sleep sacks to DMH. DMH is the nearest birthing center in Macon County, with 60 to 90 births each month, according to the nursing staff. It's important for us to put our funds back into the community in very purposeful ways, said Paul J. Leidy, Decatur Memorial Foundation Director. What not a better way to help a new family and a new infant that was birthed here at the hospital, he asked. According to Danielle Collins, DMH Manager of Obstetrics and Pediatrics, with their knowledge and experience, the nurses don't need to use the sleep sacks. The nurses, however, will educate the parents on how to properly swaddle their children in the sleep sacks. It's a lot easier to swaddle in this for families that don't know how to properly swaddle, Collins said. This is safer and easier. Sleep sacks have Velcro closures for proper placement. A secure fit is important for swaddling, Collins said. It stays below the neck, she said. There's no choice of the cloth riding, or rather no chance of the cloth riding up on their face and covering up their face while they're sleeping. Before the families leave the hospital, OB nurses teach the families the basics of safe sleep. Make sure the baby is alone in the crib with no toys or blankets. Keep the child on their back at all times and provide a smoke-free environment. According to the nonprofit agency Sudden Infant Death Services of Illinois, more than 1,800 babies in the United States die each year from SIDS. Illinois is ranked 31 out of 50 for infant mortality and continues to be one of the highest in the U.S., the organization stated on its website. The secure fit of the sleep sack also helps the baby sleep longer, Collins added. It symbolizes the womb, she said. This gives them a more comfortable sleep. OBGYN Dr. Adele Hanna wants the same for his patients. The mom will be able to sleep while the child is sleeping, he said. She knows everything is okay. The same Halo brand sleep sacks are available through retail stores. The Reynolds family had purchased larger sizes for their first child as she grew. We used the sleep sacks until she was about 2 years old, Kylie Reynolds said. They have ones where their arms are out and they can roll over. DMH began distributing the first sleep sacks only a week ago. For the new moms who missed out on the gift, Collins has one suggestion. You have to have another baby, she said. And there's a small color photo here. Madeline Reynolds is one of the first recipients of a sleep sack, a gift from the Decatur Memorial Foundation. And it shows Madeline in her bassinet with the sleep sack in gray wrapped up around her, and she is, of course, asleep. Donette Beckett, Decatur Herald and Review, photo credit. Moving on to the state and local page. Courts, Decatur woman accused of stabbing boyfriend. Articles by Tony Reed. Decatur police say they arrested a 46-year-old Decatur woman for stabbing her boyfriend twice, strangling him, and then dumping laundry detergent over his head. A sworn affidavit said the 57-year-old victim was found by patrol officers to be suffering from minor cuts to his right arm and back after the assault, which dates to the night of May 25th at a residence in the 1100 block of East Satley Street. After noting the wounds, quote, made by a large serrated knife, unquote, patrol officer Carlins Nance, who signed the affidavit, added, it should be noted that the victim's hair was covered in laundry detergent, and he advised that it had gotten into his eyes. Nance said the suspect was highly intoxicated and very uncooperative with police. She was later charged with aggravated domestic battery, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and two counts of domestic battery. The defendant was granted pretrial release and will face a preliminary hearing in Macon County Circuit Court June 11th. 40-year prison term for murder convict Tony Reed Decatur. The consequences of a 15-year-old Decatur gunman's violent preemptive strike, which resulted in the shooting deaths of a mom and her unborn child, caught up with him in court more than 2 years later. Materion A. Anderson, now aged 18, was sentenced to 40 years in prison. He was given one 20-year term for the March 8, 2023 first-degree murder of 20-year-old Janiah B. Thomas, whose six-month-old baby died with her. And he was given a second 20-year sentence to run consecutively to the first for the intentional homicide of that unborn baby. But even with such a severe punishment, Macon County Circuit Court presiding Judge Thomas Griffith ruled that sentencing guidelines established for offenses committed as a juvenile limited the full severity of the penalties that could be handed down compared to a defendant who committed the same crimes as an adult. Speaking at the sentencing hearing Thursday, Thomas told Anderson that was why he was not imposing additional prison terms of 25 years on each of the charges, sentencing enhancements that would otherwise apply if an adult uses to kill a gun. Anderson had been convicted in a two-day bench trial before Griffith in April that also saw the judge find him not guilty of the intentional aggravated battery of Thomas's now six-year-old daughter. She had been taking cover with her mother in a bedroom of a house they were visiting in the 1300 block of North Woodford Street on the afternoon of March 8, 2023, when Anderson opened fire from the street. Thomas had tried to use her body to shelter her daughter, but the bullet that killed her also hit the six-year-old in the head, destroying her right eye. At his bench trial, Anderson's attorney, Karen Root, said he had not intended to kill or target particular victims. She said he was caught up in a dispute with people inside the Woodford Street residence, and after the rival group had flashed a gun and made threats on social media, he had decided to hit back first by shooting up their house. Root said he had opened fire from 40 yards away in a three-second burst, spraying around bullets, but never aiming at anyone. Two other defendants were arrested after being accused of being involved in the shooting. Anderson's brother, 20-year-old Matavius Anderson, denies murder charges, and his case is scheduled for a pretrial hearing June 5th. Tarlan R. McKay, 19, took a plea deal April 16th that saw him admit a charge of burglary related to the shootings. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison after murder and aggravated battery charges were dismissed. Nioga fatal crash report: driver disregarded rail signs. JGTC Nioga. The Illinois State Police has reported that a driver disregarded functioning railroad crossing lights, gates, and bells early Sunday south of Nioga before colliding with a freight train, which killed him and his three passengers. ISP Troop 7 reported in a news release that the collision at approximately 4:21 a.m. at Shelby County Road 400 North and U.S. 45 killed the driver, Wesley E. Carver of Nioga, and his passengers, Josiah T. Coons, 21, also of Nioga, and Christian S. Beckler and Cruz M. Watts, both 18, of Effingham. According to the release, Carver was driving a 2006 Cadillac DTS westbound on 400 North in Shelby County when he disregarded a traffic sign, stop sign at U.S. 45 and continued across the intersection. The release reported that the driver then disregarded and avoided a railroad sign and functioning railroad crossing lights, gates, and bells before colliding with the train. There was no train derailment. This roadway between Nioga and Sigel was reopened to traffic at approximately 9:41 a.m. Police home invaded in eviction attempt. Tony Reed Decatur, a Decatur man, remains jailed after police said he tried to help a neighbor evict a resident by beating the victim with a bamboo stick in an ordeal that went on for 10 minutes. A sworn affidavit said the battery happened in the early morning hours of May 28th at an apartment building in the 3100 block of North Beth Boulevard. The 19-year-old victim said his roommate doesn't want him to live in their residence anymore, according to the affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department. He said he overheard a conversation with the 37-year-old suspect who reportedly assured the roommate, "We are going to get him out of here." The victim said the suspect forced his way into his apartment and then administered the beating. Officer Jacob Prater, who signed the affidavit, said the victim was left with reddened skin and fresh bruises on multiple locations on his body. A broken bamboo stick was found in his apartment. The suspect denied entering the apartment and said all he had done was jam the door open with his foot. He was later charged with aggravated battery and home invasion. He remains held in the Macon County Jail after a judge ruled he was too dangerous to be granted pretrial release. PBM reform heads to Pritzker. Bill aims to support rural pharmacies. This article is by Michael Malson, Springfield. Legislation aimed at reining in the practices of pharmacy benefit managers cleared the Illinois House over the weekend and is now Governor J.B. Pritzker's signature away from becoming law. The bill aims to support pharmacy access in rural and underserved areas by targeting PBMs, which function as middlemen between health insurance companies, drug manufacturers, and pharmacies. Created to help manage drug care for insurers, PBMs are criticized by opponents as too profit-focused and harmful to independent pharmacies, particularly in rural areas. Pritzker indicated in a statement that he will sign the bill, which was a top legislative priority of his session, of this session. For far too long, pharmacy benefit managers' business practices have operated with little regulation, transparency, and accountability. Illinois is putting an end to that, Pritzker said. We will lead the nation in bringing transparency to PBM drug pricing. This bill grants the state full access to their books and records so we can follow the money and prevent exploitation of patients. The bill, sponsored by State Senator Dave Kohler, Democrat Peoria, and State Representative Natalie Manley, Democrat Joliet, passed the House by a vote of 115-1. This bill holds the pharmacy benefit managers accountable, Manley said. They now have to reveal how they do business and, as we see, drugs and costs in general, mostly for prescriptions, go up every year. There's got to be a reason. This will give us the information we need and it will help save our pharmacies. Manley said the legislation was long overdue, noting that similar proposals had failed to gain traction for decades. The last significant attempt to rein in PBMs came in 2019. No-brainer legislation takes so much longer than you would expect it to, Manley said. You've got to have the right appetite in the General Assembly. It's got to be the right time in society, in our communities. It's just all the stars align at this time. But really, all the work that people did in advance of this matter to this. I stand on the shoulders of other people who have worked on the issue before me. The measure would curb patient steering by banning PBMs from requiring patients to use affiliated pharmacies. PBMs would also be prohibited from inflating drug costs at a non-affiliated or independent pharmacy to incentivize the use of PBM-owned ones. The bill also mandates greater transparency by requiring PBMs to submit annual drug pricing reports to the Illinois Department of Insurance. It would ban spread pricing, a practice in which PBMs charge insurers or health plans more for a drug than they reimburse the pharmacy, keeping the difference as profit. And it would also require PBMs to pass along 100% of the rebates they receive from drug manufacturers to health plans and patients rather than retaining a portion for themselves. Some lawmakers raised the possibility of trailer bills to amend the legislation, particularly around the fund administered by the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity that would provide grants to critical access pharmacies. We're going to talk about the money, Manley said. How much money is going to come in? How much money do the pharmacies need? Should we cut it off at $25 million? We don't know. Maybe there's a need for $35 million. Here's a fun article. Voice actor to visit Lincoln store June 4th. Valerie Wells Lincoln. Scott Innes, a voice actor and radio personality who has portrayed Scooby-Doo, Shaggy, Popeye, Yogi Bear, Boo-Boo, Fred Flintstone, Foghorn Leghorn, and more than 30 other Hanna-Barbera cartoon characters will visit Primary Collectibles in Lincoln from 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, June 4th. Innes will sign autographs and sell collectibles at the event. Admission is free. There is a small charge for autographs. Innes got his start in radio, but had been doing voices for the amusement of family and friends since he was a child. He interviewed several of the star voices on his radio show, and Don Messick, a renowned voice actor, was a fan of the show. When Messick died, Innes was asked to audition to take over some of the characters that Messick had been known for, including Scooby-Doo. After a series of auditions, Innes got the job and has been working ever since, in addition to his Baton Rouge radio show, promoting concerts, and writing. He has provided voices for talking toys, pinball games, voice games, and Hanna-Barbera cartoons. Don Messick left some big paws to fill, Innes quipped. In a recent phone interview, "I'm just glad to be a small paw print, so to speak, in the big picture." And there's a provided photo of him smiling with Shaggy, Scooby, Scrappy, and a villain character cut out against a brick wall from the all the characters from Scooby-Doo. And it's a provided photo. Dog duo fends off wildlife at airport. John Raby, Associated Press, Charleston, West Virginia. Hercules and Ned have quite the spacious office at West Virginia's busiest airport. The border collies and their handler make daily patrols along the mile-long airfield to ensure birds and other wildlife stay away from planes and keep passengers and crew safe. Hercules is also the chief ambassador, soaking in affection from passengers inside the terminal while calming some nervously waiting to board a flight at West Virginia International Jaeger Airport. Chris Kaiser, the dog's handler and the airport's wildlife specialist, said preventing a bird from hitting a plane, quote, can make a difference for someone's life, unquote. Collisions between wildlife and planes are common at airports nationwide. With that in mind, Jaeger Management in 2018 bought Hercules at the recommendation of a wildlife biologist. Hercules spent the first 18 months of his life training to herd geese and sheep around his birthplace in Charlotte, North Carolina-based Flyaway Geese, which teaches border collies to help businesses address nuisance wildlife problems. When Hercules stepped onto Charleston's airfield for the first time, "I held my breath," Flyaway Geese owner Rebecca Gibson said, "but boy, he took hold of the reins. It was his place. He's done an amazing job and has just been a great dog for them. We're very proud of him." Along the way, Hercules became a local celebrity. He has his own Instagram and TikTok accounts and regularly hosts groups of school children. Now 8, Hercules has some help. Ned was 2 when he was welcomed into the fold last year from another kennel where he trained to herd goats and geese. Ned has shadowed Hercules following commands from Kaiser and learning safety issues, such as not venturing onto the runway. "Ned's ready to go," Kaiser said. "He's picked up on all that. He's doing fantastic running birds off." Inside the airport operations center, Hercules is laid back until he's told it's time to work, barking at the door in anticipation. Ned, on the other hand, is always moving. When not outside, he'll bring his blue bouncy ball to anyone willing to play fetch. Charleston's airport is on top of a mountain and has a menagerie of wildlife, including Canada geese, hawks, ducks, songbirds, and bats. "After it rains, worms come to the surface and cause an increase in bird activity," Kaiser said. In addition to taking the dogs on their regular rounds, Kaiser is in constant contact with the airport tower, which looks for birds on the field or relays reports from airplanes that see wildlife nearby. "We get plenty of exercise," Kaiser said. "You don't gain no weight in this job. It's an all-day job. You always got your eyes on the field. You've got your ears on listening to the radio." Border collies are among the most energetic dog breeds. They've been used for decades to shoo Canada geese off golf courses. They've also scared away birds at other airports, military bases, and locks and dams. The dog's instincts are to herd, not kill. But in the mind of the bird, they're no different than a coyote or a fox, which is a natural predator for the bird, Gibson said. About 19,000 strikes involving planes and wildlife occurred at U.S. airports in 2023, of which 95% involved birds, according to a Federal Aviation Administration database. From 1988 to 2023, wildlife collisions in the U.S. killed 76 people and destroyed 126 aircraft. Perhaps the most famous bird strike occurred in January 2009 when a flight from New York's LaGuardia Airport almost immediately flew into a flock of Canada geese, knocking out both engines. Pilot Chelsea Sully Sullenberger guided the powerless jet into the frigid Hudson River. All 155 people on board survived the incident, which was captured in the 2016 movie Sully, starring Tom Hanks. At the Charleston Airport, wildlife plane incidents vary each year from a few to a couple dozen. Anytime a plane hits a bird, it has to be inspected and it causes a delay in the flight, Kaiser said. And sometimes you don't make your connecting flights, so that's how important it is to keep everything going smooth. In 2022 alone, there were 5 airplane strikes at the airport involving bats. In December 2000, a plane collided with 2 deer after landing. The tip of the right engine propeller blade separated and punctured the plane's fuselage, seriously injuring a passenger, according to the FAA. Inside the terminal, Hercules wags his tail as he moves about greeting passengers. Among them was Janet Spry, a Scott Depot, West Virginia resident waiting to board a flight to visit her daughter and grandchildren in San Antonio. Spry needed a bit of cheering up. In addition to having a fear of flying, Spry's 15-year-old cat was euthanized the previous day after being diagnosed with an inoperable condition. An impromptu visit from Hercules brought a smile and more. Hercules placed a paw on Spry's arm and delivered plenty of wet kisses. "He's making my day better," Spry said. She also joked whether the airport might want to let Hercules stay with her a while longer. "I think there was an empty seat on the plane beside me," Spry said. And there's a small to medium-sized color photo here. West Virginia International Yeager Airport wildlife specialist and dog handler Chris Kaiser poses with Hercules and Ned at the airport in Charleston, West Virginia. And both dogs are in front with their harnesses and their mouths open and looking very happy. Kaiser is kneeling behind them and his CRW airport SUV shown partially behind. And photo credit to John Raby, Associated Press. Interesting article here. Study weighing odds of galactic collision. Marcia Dunn, Associated Press, Cape Canaveral, Florida. It turns out that looming collision between our Milky Way and Andromeda galaxies might not happen after all. Astronomers reported Monday that the probability of the two spiral galaxies colliding is less than previously thought, with a 50-50 chance within the next 10 billion years. That's essentially a coin flip, but still better odds than previous estimates and farther out in time. As it stands, proclamations of the impending demise of our galaxy seem greatly exaggerated, the Finnish-led team wrote in a study appearing in Nature Astronomy. Well, good news for the Milky Way galaxy, the latest forecast may be moot for humanity. We likely won't live to see the benefit, lead author Till Sawala of the University of Helsinki said in an email. Already more than 4.5 billion years old, the sun is on course to run out of energy and die in another 5 billion years or so, but not before becoming so big it will engulf Mercury, Venus, and possibly Earth. Even if it doesn't swallow Earth, the home planet will be left a burnt ball, its oceans long since boiled away. Sawala's international team relied on the latest observations by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope and the European Space Agency's Gaia Star Surveying spacecraft to simulate the possible scenarios facing the Milky Way and next-door neighbor Andromeda, both already collided with other galaxies in their ancient past and, according to many, seem destined for a head-on crash. And some collection of small color photos here. This combination of images shows 3 future scenarios from Milky Way and Andromeda encounter. Top left, galaxies bypass at 1 million light years separation, and that's just shown at the very top of the photo, one galaxy kind of tilted on a 45 degree angle, and then it's more of seen from the side, and the other galaxy seen down in the center of the photo, you're seeing it kind of from above, like looking at a plate or a frisbee. Top right, at 500,000 light years, dark matter provides friction that brings galaxies to a close encounter. And in this one, the galaxy first, both of them are spiral galaxies, but the one on the right is, they're right in the center of the photo, and the one on the right is larger and a little bit higher than the one on the left. Bottom, a 100,000 light year separation leads to a collision. And this is just a mass of light and gas and kind of a overall blob of material shown together. And the photo credit is NASA ESA. And we'll end today's first half hour on the weather page B8 with the Decatur four-day forecast. Today, warm with some sun, wind south 12 to 25 miles per hour, high of 89. Tonight, rain and a thunderstorm, wind south 10 to 20 miles per hour, low of 70. Wednesday, heavy thunderstorms, wind southwest 8 to 16 miles per hour, high of 75 and low of 63. Thursday, cloudy with a thunderstorm, wind east-northeast 4 to 8 miles per hour, high of 79 and low of 63. And Friday, a shower and thunderstorm, wind east 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 78, low of 60. The regional outlook, windy and very warm today with clouds and sun. Expect between 4 and 8 hours of sunshine, with average relative humidity 50% and good drying conditions. Breezy tonight with periods of rain and a thunderstorm. And the Skywatch, sunrise 5:28 a.m., set 8:19 p.m. Moonrise 1:18 p.m., set 1:34 a.m. Full moon rather, June 11th. Last quarter moon, June 18th. New moon, June 25th. And first quarter moon, July 2nd. We'll look at the almanac. Temperature, the high and low, 80 and 55. Normal high and low, 79 and 59. So we're close there. The record high was 104 degrees back in 1934. And the record low was 39 degrees back in 1983. So far, since the month is so new, no precipitation, rather. Normal month to date is 0.017. Year-to-date precipitation, 10.30 inches, normal year to date, 16.28 inches. And the record for this date back in 1958 was 1.92 inches. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 3rd, 2025. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.